and this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. A year ago, the New York Times reported that American orchestras are among the least racially diverse national institutions, with African American musicians accounting for under 2% of the players. That number had not grown in over a decade. But two local institutions are working together to help move the needle and to boost diversity in American orchestras. Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss are Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra Instructional Programs Manager Carol Donovan. Welcome, Carol.
Hi, thank you.
University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music Dean Stanley Romanstein. Welcome, Stanley.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra Diversity Fellow Ian Sanders. He plays the double bass. Welcome, Ian.
Thank you.
513-419-7100 is the number to call. If you have questions or comments, you can email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those into the show. Carol, when did you all as an organization at the Symphony recognize that there's a diversity problem here?
Probably long before the diversity program actually started. I joined the Symphony full-time in 2015, which was the same year this program took off. But I would not be surprised if conversations were taking place long before.
So then talk about the origins of this relationship with CCM and how it came about.
Well, I know that Trey Devi, who was at that time president of the CSO, and Peter Langren, who was the then dean at CCM, had many conversations, and they came up with this plan, and I'm guessing perhaps Stanley might have more information about the actual genesis of the program, but it was between the two men.
So Stanley, being the dean of CCM, which is such a prestigious institution, nationally recognized for the artists that it produced in a variety of fields, what type of recognition was there within that building that said, you know, we've got a diverse student body and perhaps they're not getting the same opportunities?
Exactly. This really is about opportunity. And I'm very proud to be the inheritor of this program, as is my colleague Jonathan Martin from the CSO. This program, as you know, was the first of its kind. We were groundbreakers, people doing something that had not been done before. And I'm really thrilled that our program has been imitated in other places all over the country. I think it's to the CSO's credit that they were looking for greater diversity among their performing artists, because we all know, and the data supports the idea, that who's on the stage makes a difference in who's in the audience. And from CCM's standpoint, we're looking for greater professional opportunities for our graduates. So it's been a wonderful partnership between the two institutions and helps do something very special for both organizations in promoting professional opportunities for our graduates. And I'm glad Ian's here today, and promoting greater diversity within the professional orchestra world.
And that's right. And so the program here, the Diversity Fellows, mm-hmm. as they're referred to, is designed, according to this news release, to provide new opportunities for underrepresented musicians while simultaneously fostering a more inclusive environment in the orchestral industry. And recently, and the CSO announced the five new Diversity Fellows. And there are people from a variety of different communities. So, Ian, you're a Diversity Fellow.
Yes.
What has the program meant to you?
It's been an amazing opportunity. It's definitely been something where my playing has just grown exponentially. Because of my background, believe it or not, I've never had the chance to actually just focus on playing my instrument. There's always been, you know, paying my way through school, working multiple jobs. And so, yes, bass has always been important, but it hasn't always been the main thing that I can focus on. So here I actually had the chance to focus on that, and having that opportunity has been great. And of course, working with, you know, members of the CSO is just amazing. I mean, talk about a trial by fire. I mean, they play at such a high level, and I assure you, you don't want to be the weak link in a section or anything like that. So it's been wonderful, and they've all been so, you know, accepting and everything like that. I mean, probably the greatest thing that they've done is just treat me like a colleague, which is, you know, I come in, they respect my opinion and everything, and And they always give advice, you know, say, you know, this is what you want to, you know, keep down the path and everything. It's a tough road for everybody. And, you know, they understand that. But they've always been very encouraging about every facet of my playing and developing my career. So it's been wonderful.
When did you start playing the double bass?
I switched to double bass in college. I started playing the violin, and I started playing the violin so late as far as violin goes. And that's more so because, you know, we couldn't afford an instrument in the beginning, so I had to wait until things worked out. And so I played the violin from fifth grade all throughout the rest of grade school. And when I went to college, unfortunately, I hadn't had lessons or anything like that, so I couldn't really compete for a scholarship. But I found out that Old Dominion University, the school that I went to, they desperately needed bass players. And I figured out, well, if you need a bass player, I need money, and we can make this work. So I, you know, became a full-time bassist as a freshman in college.
What's your background? Which part of the country are you from?
I am from Virginia. It might be tough because I'm trying to hide my accent.
I'm from Kentucky, so okay. I'm hiding mine too.
South Carolina.
All right, so
there you go. Yeah, I'm from Norfolk, Virginia, and I grew up there. With my mom and a great family and a great church community as well. So I'm very happy.
Well, you referenced that you weren't able to afford a violin when mm-hmm. you first had the desire to start playing.
Mm-hmm.
What attracted you to this type of creative expression as opposed to something that would have been more accessible?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because my parents don't play at all. You know, they hadn't even gone to a concert or anything. But as far as I can remember, I wanted to play the violin. I cannot remember a period before just not wanting to do that. And so, yeah, I went to my mom maybe in like kindergarten asking her, can I play the violin? And once again, she thought it was a good idea, but we just couldn't afford to rent the instrument. But that sound has always been intimate for me. And I just can't recall a time where that just wasn't a part of my life. And I didn't want it to be a part of my life. So I wish I could say, you know, on, you know, December 21st, 1990, I was struck, but it might've been something I heard, you know, as a baby, and it just stuck with me all this time.
Were you aware at any point prior to becoming an adult and a college student playing that if this was something you wanted to pursue professionally, that there appeared to be limited opportunities for people of color?
Yeah. I was quite aware that at a very early age. I think as a musician of color, one thing that you will notice when you start out in elementary school, because I went to primarily black school, you know, everyone in the orchestras there is black. But as you go up and you go through the youth orchestras, you start to see less and less. So even when I went to middle school, I saw, you know, less musicians of color. When I went to high school, I saw less musicians of color. And then when I went to regionals and all states, you just see less and less. So you're aware quite early that there are fewer of you as you go up in the ranks.
Do you think that there are components of black culture that doesn't lend itself to kids wanting to pursue orchestra, or do you think that it's more economics?
Yeah, I think it's maybe a little bit of both, and to the degree it can be different for everyone. I think it's probably just more so economics. That's the main one, because it's just, you know, really expensive to, you know, go to the concert hall, take lessons, rent the instrument, and do all these sort of things. So that's a, you know, economic factor as well. As far as maybe part of the culture, I mean, because you don't see a lot of people doing it, then, you know, less and less kids are just inspired to do that, because it's sort of like golf before Tiger or tennis before Serena. It's like if they don't see that representation, the interest isn't there. But as they do see the representation, you do start to see that interest start to collect around that. So I think that's a big thing as well.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Today we're discussing Diversity Fellows, the joint effort between the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra and the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music to boost diversity in the ranks of American orchestras. We are joined by Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra Instructional Programs Manager Carol Dunavant, UC CCM Dean Stanley Romanstein, and Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra Diversity Fellow Ian Sanders. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you would like. Let me ask Carol and Stanley this as well, because you, Stanley, certainly see a variety of students in your programs coming from different backgrounds across the country. And Carol, I imagine that people who pass through the symphony also have a lot of diverse stories as well. And Ian mentioned that economics plays heavily into this access. So in your experience now in running this program and having success with it, how do you find the people who have been able to break through those economic challenges, not just the racial or ethnic challenges, and get their hands on these instruments? How exactly are they located?
I think, Carol, you may have a better answer to that. The thing that I was going to say that we've really learned through this partnership and through doing something that's so innovative and creative right here in Cincinnati is that no one organization can really work in isolation to solve the complex challenge of increasing diversity in the arts. The CSO, as wonderful as it is, looks to CCM and says, but we need great conservatories who are educating students and preparing them for the orchestral ranks. We look to high schools, to arts high schools across the country, including the School for the Creative and Performing Arts right here in Cincinnati. We look to high schools and say, we can't do it on our own. We need you. And in turn, those high schools are starting to look to junior highs and elementary schools and to communities and families and saying, if we're going to address this challenge in any meaningful way, it has to be everybody joining hands and saying, this is really important for us. It's important for our communities. It's important for our kids. It's important for our future. And if we're going to solve the challenge, we have to do it together.
And when schools face economic hardships, Carol, it seems that the first programs that are cut for budgetary concerns are, yes, the creative arts. And a lot of the schools that struggle the most are the ones in the inner cities that would be most likely to serve in a minority population. So how does the country itself overcome this? Because there's going to be this growing rift, it seems, between who gets the opportunity to explore the side of themselves.
Well, I think there's always going to be that pendulum with the arts. And we'll, at some point, it's swinging back. It is swinging back. So I think we're going to see a little bit more balance because there is a concerted effort out there to make sure that the arts are a part of the school day. Kentucky's very strong in their advocacy. I know Ohio is very strong. And some of the things that the CSO are doing specifically is sort of laying the basis for what Stanley said, because we have more programs than just the fellowship. So we have our youth orchestras, and we also have the Nouveau Pre-Conservatory program, which is like a miniature diversity fellowship. So we are actually actively looking for African-American, Hispanic, Latinx, other underrepresented communities to come in, and we are holding their hands and walking them right down the path. So our goal is they will get through high school, they will go into college. We're going to help them get into the schools of music, conservatories, and eventually when they graduate, it would be really awesome if they came back and were a diversity fellow and complete that circle. And I know that other schools are doing that as well, and orchestras that have similar programs.
Let's go to the phone lines and get some questions. We have Joy on the line. Hi, Joy. What's your question or comment?
Hi, real quick. So my son was a percussionist, well, he still is, but he graduated from SCTA. He was actually what they call a Corbett winner there, so pretty good at what he did. What I didn't see is kind of what your guest just said, and I'm glad to hear that there's something like that now, or if it was around, we certainly didn't know about it. And he ended up going into physics, which I'm okay with that too, because he's very good at that, but there is a part of me that sometimes kind of sad, like, what could have his basically what you said, that connection that let him think about what his career may have been if he would have pursued, playing for an orchestra, for example. But because that wasn't
okay,
really there,
Joy, I think we've got the gist of your comment. I don't mean to cut you off. I appreciate very much your call and what you have to say. We're getting a little bit of a weird connection there. But I think the gist of her point is, what about kids who don't have access to mentors. And that's kind of what you were touching on just moments ago, Carol, is trying to create that pipeline from the lowest grade level to college.
Right. And mentoring is a big part of the diversity fellowship. It's something that we feel very strongly about. I chuckle when I'm talking to the fellows sometimes one-on-one, and I remind them that this is Orchestra 101, and this is how, you know, please be proactive with your mentors and don't expect them to come to you necessarily, but you need to take advantage of them. And so it's our program with the Nouveau Pre-Conservatory is been around in, but just for strings. This is going to be the first season where we add winds and just woodwinds and brass, and at some point we'll be able to continue to expand that. And again, mentoring will be a big part of that. But if a child is in a school and they have a school music director, that's their first mentor. That's the person that they need to go to and get the support, because that person's going to support them.
I think we've got time for one more phone call. Let's go to Thomas. Hi, Thomas. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I just wanted to say, ask a young fellow if he had ever considered educating himself, if Cincinnati Public Schools still had the Suzuki program, and to introduce him to the Uptown String Quartet if he had never heard of it. Thank you.
Okay, Thomas, we appreciate the call. We'll give Ian a chance. I think that, in essence, that question is about, have you ever thought about being an educator to younger musicians who may have grown up the way you did?
The first year I was here, I worked with the My Cincinnati program. I'm very passionate about working with musicians who've had similar backgrounds as myself. So I'm very passionate about education, and I'm always open to those opportunities as well.
How important is it for that first touch of somebody who's doing this someone who's never seen it before?
To go back to Joy's question, I mean, it's essential. I mean, I understand that you need that mentor, someone who's invested in you and not just to, you know, to just be there to teach you the notes and the scales. I mean, that's all great, but you just need someone there who can actually say, like, all right, here's the path you can take. Here's what you can do. And I'm here for you. And, you know, I want to be a mentor for someone, like I've had so many myself.
The incoming class of CSO CCM Diversity Fellows are 24-year-old Jordan Curry, who plays the violin, 28-year-old Christian Diaz, who plays the viola, 24-year-old Michael Martin, who also plays the double bass, like Ian, 23-year-old Danielle Wilson, who plays the cello. I saved this person's name for last because I forgot to ask you how to pronounce it before we went on, but is it Magdiel?
Yes.
Yeah.
Magdiel Antiquera. 23 years old and plays the violin. Okay. So welcome those diversity fellows. My thanks to Carol, Stanley, and Ian for coming in and talking about the Diversity Fellowship Program at the CSO and CCM today.
Thanks so much for inviting.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstrow. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.